Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. We are essentially a week away from the Kentucky Derby, so some Kentucky Derby talk this morning. Churchill Downs opens up this afternoon, 6 p.m. post time, so it's a little bit later for the Churchill card today. Let me remind you, in fact, there are a couple of promos coming up, and one today that will involve Churchill a little bit. That's the OTB Live bankroll here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Normally, they're a little bit earlier. Today's bankroll will go from 3 until 7 because we'll cover a little bit of the early portion of that Churchill Downs opening day card. Put your name in the hat today at the Racebook between 11 and 3. Folks will get randomly selected, 20 folks, picked for the bankroll team this afternoon here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Love to have you swing by. 711 Central Avenue in Albany, also that location tomorrow for the double promotion, Clubhouse Racebook, play the board, and the match bet promotion here at the Clubhouse Racebook on Sunday. So a couple of nice promos coming up here at the Clubhouse Racebook Saturday afternoon and Sunday as well. All right, going to get underway with Racing Across America for this Saturday. As I said, we have some Derby conversation, caught up with Jenny Reese. We'll hear from her a little bit later on. Jenny, of course, was the longtime racing writer for the Louisville Courier-Journal. Now she's working for various Kentucky organizations. She works for Kentucky Downs during their season and around the year, actually. But she also works for the Kentucky HBPA, and she's been doing some nice interviews for them on the backstretch last week and this week in the lead-up to the Kentucky Derby, talking and Oaks as well, talking to contenders, connections, trainers, jockeys, and whatnot. Has some footage of the workouts out there. So Jenny plugged into what's happening at Churchill over the past week or so as far as workouts and whatnot. So we caught up with her and got some of that information. So Jenny Reese a little bit later on, but we're going to start things out with trainer Mark Cassie. Actually, both of these interviews were taped yesterday, Friday, and Mark was actually at OBS, the Ocala sale. We caught up with him in between bidding and whatnot. Busy time for Mark because he had workers on the track at Churchill on Friday morning. When I texted him on Thursday, he said, "Yeah, I got a bunch working at my Ocala facility as well," and then he was at the sale, but he carved out a few minutes for us to talk a little helium and a little soup and sandwich. Two contenders, two kind of fun, interesting contenders in the Kentucky Derby. But we also got an update on two nice runners that had won stakes not just earlier this year, but Got Stormy, who has had the fabulous career. But we updated them because they also worked at Churchill on Friday. Got Stormy and Tap It to Win, who, as I say, had a couple of nice stakes wins earlier in the year. We got an update on where they may be going down the road, potentially some Saratoga, perhaps. So all of that coming up next with trainer Mark Cassie. Happy to be joined now by trainer Mark Cassie. Of course, a couple of runners in the Kentucky Derby, Helium and Soup and Sandwich. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
You are joining us from Ocala, the OBS sale. You're taking part in that, but curious, when do you plan to head up to Louisville?
I'm not sure yet, Seth. You know, the draw is on Tuesday, so try to be there for that. You know, today was our last. We breezed both Soup and Sandwich and Helium today, so the major work is done, and now it's just keeping your fingers crossed and staying happy and safe.
Absolutely. Give us what the feedback was. How'd the works go this morning for Helium and Soup and Sandwich?
Well, I talked to Julian Leperoux after the work. He was very happy with Helium. Helium is kind of a push-button horse, a horse that is actually a better racehorse than he is in the morning. He's a good workhorse in the morning, but he's much better in the afternoon. And then you have Soup and Sandwich, who he's by to into mischief, but he is out of a Tappet mare, so he's a little more excitable, I'll say. And he got a little riled up going to the pole, but as soon as he got working, you know, it's very busy at Churchill, especially Derby week. And Tyler was extremely happy. Tyler doesn't usually say a whole lot, but he called me shortly after the work, and he's very optimistic. He's he may be even more excited about Soup and Sandwich than he was about War of Will.
Yeah, we're actually watching the work right now. We pulled up some footage, and it looks like Tyler is really working to kind of get him to settle down a little bit at the beginning. But now once he gets his head straightened out and gets his mind to business, he looks pretty good this morning.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wish that our pony had let him loose a little earlier. Sometimes when you take him with the pony, and we do that because he tends to, like I said, there's a lot going on, so you're trying to get him to the pole safely. And sometimes when you let them away from the pony for the first little bit, they get excited. But Tyler was really happy because I mentioned that to him. He said, "Now he shut off when I asked him to shut off." And he did that also in his race at Tampa. The race at Gulfstream, we all know, anybody that follows Gulfstream realizes that the post position is very important at Gulfstream going two turns. So we were hung out a little bit. Johnny had to ask him to go out of there. And once he got him going, he said it took him a while to get him shut off. So, you know, he's kind of he's maybe not quite as mature as Helium, and he's learning. But I think there's a lot of improvement in him. I think you're going to see a lot better horse in the Kentucky Derby than you saw in the Florida Derby.
They're both lightly raced.
And also, I think, you know, Helium, I mean, I don't see how Helium can do anything but improve. He won the Tampa Bay Derby off of 4.5 months, never running on dirt or never running two turns. He ran a 3 on the Thoroughgraph. I would say if you can run somewhere in the 1 range, you're going to be right there, and you would sure think he could move up to be a 1.
Yeah, we're watching the stretch run to the Tampa Bay Derby here, and as a bettor, I just love this. I mean, he showed no quit. I mean, it was absolute fight because you thought Hidden Stash was going to go by, and he just said no way. You had to be absolutely thrilled with that performance, career start number 3, and the seasonal debut to show that kind of grit.
I've been doing this for 40-plus years. I have never ran a horse, best of my memory, that overcame so much and was, you know, able to win. Again, as I said, you know, the 4.5 months, never running on the dirt, never running two turns. He had an extremely, extremely wide trip. And I thought at the top of the lane when that horse went by him, I was going to be just happy to be second. And for him to show the grit to come back and win just was, you know, I had my mouth wide open, like, I can't believe this. And then after the race, when he came back to the winner's circle, I figured he would be exhausted, and he really didn't take a deep breath.
Yeah, he looked fabulous. As I say, he's a bettor. I love that kind of grit, if they can duke it out down to the wire. And this one had to come back, as you say, with Hidden Stash having gone by a little bit at the top of the stretch. I'm curious what the thought process was after the race, because it seemed like even after the Tampa Bay Derby, you were already thinking, well, this may be our start going into the Kentucky Derby. Were there any considerations given to one more race, and what was the thought process to go right from the Tampa Bay Derby to the Kentucky Derby?
Well, no, there really never was. You know, if he'd gotten beat and we thought we needed points, we would have come back. But look, he ran that race, and again, the buyer number is nowhere any, doesn't show anywhere close to how good his race was. The 84 buyer is actually, I understand the number, but if you watch his trip, you'll just understand. He probably, we figured it out that day. I had somebody measure the feet. There was an older horse that won the stake earlier on in the card, and he ran a 97 buyer. And we figured it out that he ran 2 lengths faster than that horse. So if you really put the number of feet to the buyer, he would run somewhere around 100. So now, that was off of 4.5 months. So coming off of 2 months, that's a piece of cake. I just didn't want to come back. He ran so well fresh. Why would I want to try to put another race in him when it wasn't really necessary? You know, obviously you like to have a little more experience, but especially in the Kentucky Derby, you don't always get everything you want. So you have to play the cards the way they were dealt, and this is what we're trying to do and trying to play it the best way we can.
You mentioned the Florida Derby for Soup and Sandwich. We'll take a look at that replay, the stretch run. Known Agenda will be the winner. Soup and Sandwich, the number 8, runs second. Lately raced also with only 3 races under the belt, but notable, all 3 races were this year. So he didn't get started until January 28th of his 3-year-old season. Did you have the thought that when you saw him in the mornings preparing for the 3-year-old season that you had something special with Soup and Sandwich?
Yeah, we had him also as a 2-year-old. We always put him right up at the top. Now, did I anyway think before he made his first start that we would be talking about the Kentucky Derby? No. I mean, that's something that you just can't prepare for or even imagine. You have a lot of horses that train good, but usually can underperform in the afternoon. He's done much and much more than I could have ever hoped for, and I truly believe both horses will be heard from at the end.
Yeah, I find them both interesting. I thought they were interesting in their last races and played around a little bit, so I'm looking forward to seeing those two in the Kentucky Derby. Mark, before we let you go, though, there was a couple of other of your workers. I checked Equibase this morning that were out on the track up at Churchill Downs, and I'd just like a little update. Got Stormy and Tappet to win. Got Stormy was, again, on the track this morning, and we're going to watch the replay of her seasonal debut. Got Stormy is going to be the number 2 horse here in a blanket finish in the Honey Fox. This was a pretty good-looking debut. Just really, again, gutsy and gritty. She's something special, and she was sold last fall for $2.7 million. How special was it to get her back in the barn for the 6-year-old season?
Well, Seth, that was funny because I knew what the reserve was, and when she went over the reserve, I said, well, you know, I've been lucky to have her, and it was a great career. And I figured she was going to be a broodmare, and about 15 minutes later, Ned Toffee called me for Spendthrift and said, we bought that filly, and I thought he just was going to talk to me about her. And he said, I have maybe probably one of the dumbest questions you'll ever be asked. And he said, we're going to run her some more. Would you like to train her? So I went from, you know, sad to happy very quickly, and very much appreciated the opportunity, you know, to run her another year. I thought her race in the Honey Fox was good. She sometimes likes to run a little closer together, and I thought that was a good race, and I'm hopeful that we're going to, you know, she's going to move forward from that, and we're going to run her, I guess it's a Derby Day or Oaks Day. I get them all the same race. I think we won it with Teppan and a few others.
Well, I have to ask, I know it's a ways away, but I remember a couple of years ago watching her win the 4-star Dave up at Saratoga 7 days after the win in the Della Rose, which was a really wonderful performance up at Saratoga. Last year she was 2nd in the race. So as I say, I know it's a ways away, but might the 4-star Dave be on her agenda for this year?
It's penciled in already. Yep.
That's what we like
for
to hear.
Sure. That's one of our main goals.
Excellent. And finally, Tappet to win. Again, up at Saratoga, ran 2nd last year in the Allen Jerkins. But we're going to watch the seasonal debut for Tappet to win this year. The Sprint Stakes down at Tampa. Tappet to win is going to be the number 5 horse here. Nice winner in the seasonal debut. Chart margin just over 4 lengths. And as I say, he was on the work tab this morning also at Churchill Downs. What's up next for Tappet to win?
The Churchill Downs Sprint. I think it's 7/8 of a mile Derby Day. I think I think you're going to see an even better Tappet to win this year. We ran him. So the Florida Derby was Saturday. So I was in South Florida. I was at another horse sale as well. And he was running, Tappet to Win was running Sunday. And Antonio Gallardo called me. He rides a lot for us. And he said, is there anything I need to know about this horse? And I said, yep, you're getting ready to ride a really good horse. And after the race, he called me. He said, boss, you were right. What a horse. So I thought he was very impressive. Of course, you know, the waters get deeper here, but he's a pretty big fish himself.
Yeah, very good. Tappet to Win, as we saw, winning at Tampa in the seasonal derby. It looks pretty good. Mark, before I let you go, I just have to ask. We have a good relationship here at Capital OTB with the folks at Woodbine, and we usually make a couple trips up every year, the Queen's Plate and the Woodbine Mile, and we'll see you up there very often. And you've obviously been a main performer at Woodbine. Last year, obviously, we didn't make our trips, and this year we're disappointed. We talk in the studio. We've been talking the past month or so. We just feel for the folks up there with the delayed season at Woodbine, over at Mohawk on the Sulky side. Just really tough for the horse people. I wonder if you had any thoughts on Woodbine and the situation up there with the delayed season this year.
It's bad. Yeah. It really is, Seth. It's bad. And I feel for all my fellow Canadian horsemen, you know, whether it's thoroughbreds, standardbreds. It's such a huge industry in Ontario, and I find it, you know, extra frustrating when we see how well places like New York and California and Kentucky and all these places are able to run, even though there's been some lockdowns. You know, it's so frustrating. I feel so bad for them. It's not great for us, but we're fortunate enough that, you know, we're still racing in other jurisdictions. They don't have that luxury. And I mean, you can't, you know, a Canadian couldn't even leave the country if they wanted to. So very, very frustrating. I understand there's, you know, a lot of things going on and there's sick people. I just feel for everyone there.
Yeah, I have said the same thing over the past few weeks. I mean, the roadmap is out there with what the tracks in this country have done over the past year as far as protocols and whatnot. I wish they would kind of read that roadmap up in Canada, but we'll keep our fingers crossed for everybody up there that it comes to fruition sooner rather than later. But as far
the roadmap for horse racing, maybe the roadmap for a lot of things.
Yeah.
They seem to, I don't know, whatever they're doing is not working.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
And I say that, and then I have three Canadian, three kids that were born in Canada. Two of them have had COVID already. Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't want to get into the politics or running. I'm obviously not fit to run a government, but it's disappointing, extremely disappointing.
I hear you. I think everybody has been in the same mindset over the past year. It's tough on each side of the equation. But, Mark, we appreciate busy time. We certainly appreciate your taking the time. But more importantly, wish you a lot of good luck next week down at Churchill Kentucky Derby with Helium and Soup and Sandwich, and we will talk again.
Well, good to talk to you, Seth, and maybe hopefully the next time I talk to you, I'll train the Kentucky Derby winner.
we'll certainly be hoping for that. We'll have you live on set up at Saratoga, and we'll introduce you as the Kentucky Derby winning trainer, perhaps. So, yeah, we'll knock on wood and hope that happens. Mark, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Seth.
Mark Cassie, a couple of nice contenders coming up in next week's Kentucky Derby.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Happy to be joined now by our friend Jenny Reese. Always like to reach out Kentucky Derby time. Jenny, obviously based in Louisville for many years, working at the Louisville Courier-Journal, but now probably even more busy in quote-unquote retirement from her work at the Journal, but doing some work for the Kentucky HBPA on the backstretch the past couple of weeks and then the lead-up to the Derby, catching up with connections for Kentucky Derby contenders. So I thought we'd talk a little Derby with Jenny. Jenny, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Always a pleasure.
Happy to have you on board. And I want to start out because I pulled up a little video from 2-3 days ago. Essential Quality was on the track, but people will see in the background snow on the ground. What's going on? You're a longtime Louisville person. Talk a little bit about the season and snow in April.
Yeah, it's, hey, listen, I remember snowflakes in the 89, during the afternoon in the 89 Derby. Easygoer Sunday Silence this year, so it definitely can happen, and it's almost a rite of spring that it snows on opening day at Keeneland. Of course, that's, you know, the first weekend in April, but yeah, you know, in a couple of days it's going to be 82, so there you go. It's just Kentucky.
Yeah, it, as I saw that, I thought that, but then the next day it snowed here, and I have a sister in Arkansas. She said it snowed there the other day, so everybody got a kind of a blast of it over the last week. But as you say, it's springtime, it's changing, getting a little warmer. So by Derby Day, we're knocking wood, hoping for the best. Speaking of Derby Day, I'm curious, on the backstretch, is there buzz this year amongst the participants? Is there a little buzz in town with Derby returning to the first Saturday in May and some fans being able to be on track?
Yeah, I won't say it's like 2019, but it's definitely more buzz than last year when there was like, no buzz. And even the media last year, I was fortunate to be one of five journalists selected as pool reporters. And we were able to get on the backside and do interviews that the content was then made available to everybody. But no other, including TV reporters, were allowed back there, except for, I guess, NBC. So this year, there's no restrictions on the backside as far as the media. But while it's certainly more than, your average daily week or whatever, it's not quite the throng yet. It's pretty much local. Dave Granning did come in from the Daily Racing Forum, was out this morning and stuff. But it is nice. But what you don't really see is, and that would sort of be next week anyways, the people, just the friends of friends of friends that come out in the morning. That's been a big part. I think they're really trying to cut back on that, and understandably so with COVID. And we're still not supposed to wear masks. And, I'm double vaccinated, and I'm waiting for the first horse to show up with the name double vaxxed. I'm thinking there'll be a lot of those, but various versions. But, yeah, it's. I think people are excited just to have some semblance of normalcy return. With the Kentucky Derby actually being in May, and I still have a hard time getting my arms around it, that it was Labor Day weekend when we had the Derby last time.
Yeah, and I talked to you off the air about tip my cap to you on the air. Our Daily Report podcast, we've been using some of the audio of the interviews you've been doing via the Kentucky HBPA. Great work on the backstretch, catching up with the contenders. Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks and beyond, but notable, it seems like all of them, it's just about every interview you've done, there has been some reference to, it's kind of nice to get back to some sense of normalcy this year.
Well, it was interesting because the Ortiz brothers were out working horses for Todd this morning, their Derby mounts, and Jose, you know, it's easy for us to get. You assume that he rides the Derby every year. He wasn't in the Derby last year, and I don't think Irad was either, because not many New York guys came down. I think Castellano was about the only New York jock that came down because of how tough it was to get back to ride in New York if they had come down here for. And Churchill made it. It was tough on the front end to get into Churchill, and then on the going back, it was tough, I think, on the New York end. So just unless you were riding one of the favorites, it didn't make a lot of sense to come down. So that's one thing that's going to be different this year. You're going to have the whole full complement of all the best riders in the country riding the card.
Yeah, that's right. I hadn't even thought about that. But you're right. To get back to New York was going to be a whole thing. And it overlapped with the end of the Saratoga meet. So you're going to miss Saratoga mounts.
Yeah.
Potentially. You're
and,
right.
And
that
and
was
I,
very
I think
different.
You couldn't go back and ride, right? If you left,
yeah.
There was something that was.
Yeah, there was like a 2-week period that you were going to have to miss.
And Churchill made you come in like the week of, the whole week.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't, it was for John Velasquez. Oh, listen to me. I'm thinking, what New York? I'm thinking Kessel. No, Velasquez. And he won the Derby. So, yes.
Yeah, there was definitely a few. And as you say, if you had the mount, you were going to go. If you had the right mount, you were going to go. But otherwise, it meant missing a chunk of Saratoga, maybe a little bit beyond. So it's different this year, no question about it. Let's talk specifically this year. Every year, it seems like there are one or two buzz horses that jump out the workouts in the morning. I'm not getting so much of a sense that there is one of those buzz horses, but tell me, from being on the ground, is there a horse or two that has kind of popped out on the workouts?
Yes. The closest thing to a buzz horse is Mandaloon. And his work was very impressive. He looks great. I can't, besides the fact that buzz horses seem like they never win, or rarely, I'm still one of those people that look at certain patterns. And even though these patterns are harder and harder to, they used to call them like the Derby rules or guidelines, I still think that some things that hold. I'm still even think two-year-old, the unraced two-year-old, yes, Justify ended that, but that's still a pretty good, two for the history of the Derby. Why Mandaloon to me is up against it is you just don't see horses that run that bad in their last prep win the Kentucky Derby. Yes, you have the Thunder Gulches. Yes, you have the Sea Heroes, but they finished fourth. They didn't finish, I want to say he was sixth, beaten maybe 11 lengths. And I think they can be second. They could go on and win the Preakness. They could go on and win the Preakness in the Belmont. But yeah, he was sixth in the Louisiana Derby. But I just think that there's something about the Derby that the toughness that it requires that you need to have had a good prep in your life. So I think that's one thing that does hold up. I think you go back into the the 50s or the 60s to get a horse that was even fifth in its last race. And on top of it, it's going to have been, 6 weeks, the Louisiana Derby to the Kentucky Derby. So even though he's a wonderful horse and the closest thing to a buzz horse, I just think he's way up against it to actually win the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, I find him kind of interesting. I liked him in that Louisiana Derby, and the disappointing finish does leave you. But that means you get maybe a little bit better odds. Essential Quality is really the lone horse that comes in with consistency. And other than that, the last series of prep races, nobody really kind of stepped up and validated their form. I mean, you had the result in the Wood with Bourbonic, which was just, a huge long shot getting it done, but for Todd Pletcher. But I think Rock Your World is going to be interesting with the triple-digit buyer coming in from Southern California, Essential Quality with the consistency I mentioned. I'm curious, though, if there have been horses that have been working out over the past week that may be interesting to you as horses that might offer a little bit of a price that in the morning have looked a little bit interesting.
Yes. Midnight Bourbon, I think, has. He, just listening, we handicap the trainers as much as we handicap the horses. And just the vibes coming from Steve Asmussen. He really is very happy how Midnight Bourbon is doing. And I'd be interested. You know, he's got a, you know, fair amount of speed, but I think he's going to be one of these horses that's going to benefit from the addition of speed, because maybe some of those races, that's just where he found himself, but not really what's going to be his best lick. You know, he's wonderfully bred Midnight Bourbon. I do Truth in Advertising. I do have to admit that I got a little bit more reading interest in Midnight Bourbon in that one of my employers, the Kentucky Downs, Ron Winchell, owns it. So, but that aside, I think that he's going to be, you know, he'll be 20-1 easy, right? In a 20-horse field. He's probably the main one that I'm thinking of a price that, that I think will be a price that are interesting that I really think could win. Hilliam is kind of a cool horse, and Soup and Sandwich is getting a little bit of a buzz too. I will say that, Soup and Sandwich as well. But I think with Hilliam, I still think three races and only one this year, and that at mile 16th is a tough way to try to win the Kentucky Derby against some very good horses. You know, we might not have, other than Essential Quality, like some real huge, you know, hype horses. But I think we've got some really good horses that are bred to go a mile and a quarter. And that's one thing Todd Pletcher says about his four. He thinks as a collective group, this is the best group overall he's had that's actually bred to get the distance. And not just bred, but act like they really want to get the distance. So that's, again, handicapping trainers. I will tell you that Todd Pletcher has been in a great mood, and Chad Brown has been as well. And now that's another horse, highly motivated. If you like the favorite, you know, this horse just got beat a neck by him. And while I do think that Essential Quality is going to improve off the Bluegrass, I think that was a very good race, and people that think, well, it shows vulnerability, I'm thinking maybe Highly Motivated is a, you know, people ought to be looking at him, that he's maybe a better horse than some people are giving him credit to. And they came home real fast, about as fast as any prep. You know, I followed the last 3/8 and the last 8th, and they came home like in 36. So that would be another one, highly motivated. And, you know, what price is he going to be? No, he's got to be 20-something-1, I'm thinking.
Yeah, we just showed a little footage of Highly Motivated on the track, and I'm with you. I think he's kind of interesting. You mentioned the Asmussen horse, the other Asmussen horse, Superstock, brings a great story. And you talked about
story.
It on the back stretch a couple times with Steve. And you can see story being his dad being involved in the ownership. They were going to sell the horse with the pandemic. The sale was canceled. Yeah. They didn't sell. And so now his mom and dad are part of it. And you can see when you've interviewed him a couple times on the backstretch, you can see it means a lot to him.
Oh, it absolutely does. I think he's up against it in that I just think they came home a little slow in the Arkansas Derby. And you know how I follow that. And one thing about that is usually the Arkansas Derby, they're finishing fast, to where for a long time people were saying, oh, that stretch actually goes downhill slightly. Some people deny that. Some people swear that it was. But regardless, I'm used to Arkansas Derby horses. For whatever reason, they come home fast. And they did not in this Arkansas Derby. So I think but they do feel he has made great strides from the Rebel, which was his first start of the year. There's a lot of tentacles to that story. You know, you mentioned the COVID, but beyond that, then his Steve's son, who had, you know, started out riding him because he started riding when the pandemic shut down University of Texas, Austin. They had virtual classes, so he engaged in a quiet, lifelong desire. He'd had to be a rider, at least for a spell of time, and he rode the horse's first two races, and then he asked his granddad, who's the co-owner of the horse, can I ride him in the stakes, Texas? That was the other thing. We sold at this sale, and the sale was canceled, right?
Yeah.
But he was still eligible for the stakes. So then he runs in the stakes, and, you know, Keith, young Keith asks his granddad, can I ride a horse in the stakes, circumventing the trainer, who is his dad. And the elder Keith says, yeah. And so then he wins. And then Steve explains it. They're thinking, well, this is a better, maybe, you know, we could hang on to this horse a little longer and probably improve his price. And so they were pointing towards the Golden, the Kentucky Jockey Club at Churchill, and something happened to the horse, but they thought that they probably would have won that race, and then the money would have been so crazy they would have sold. So all these things that look like bad luck, how they're good luck. But I did ask Steve, and I realize I'm getting off topic here, but I said, well, didn't the jockey, like, talk to his granddad about trying to keep the mount on the horse? Steve goes, they went back into, you know, in class, and he had to go back to college.
Yeah, that's a tough way to lose your Derby mount. I had to go back to school.
Yeah, I had to go back to college, yeah. It would be a heck of, and the other part of that, that because it's such a great thing, a cool thing with Steve's parents, I mean, how many thousands of top horses have they prepared over the last 50 years for other people, and then to actually have one themselves that wins a grade one, $1 million race, and now they're in the Kentucky Derby. It's, that's just, but the other co-owner of that is Irv Woolsey, who is like, he is George Strait's manager. He like discovered George Strait and as his career long manager. He's like huge in Nashville. I started referring to him as Nashville talent mogul, Irv Woolsey, but he's been in racing probably 50 years himself. He has several different trainers, Dale Romans, Mike Tomlinson as well. And it's the biggest race, the Arkansas Derby that he'd ever won. It's a heck of a story.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, you can see it in the winner's circle after the Arkansas Derby with Steve's mom, and you can see it on Steve's face when you interviewed him the past couple of weeks on the backstretch at Churchill. You've alluded to it a couple of times, and I checked out your Twitter feed last night, so I pulled up the chart. The final fractions theory, and as I say, you've kind of alluded to it as you talked a little bit here, as coming into the Derby, you like the final fractions of the last two-turn race for some of these horses. Talk about the theory and how it plays into the horses you look at as contenders for the Derby.
Well, it when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. And I was retweeting Ron Flatter's chart. I got to give him a lot of credit. He gives me the credit, and I suppose, yeah, I, you know, kind of came up with it and popularized it, and he's taken it kind of to another level. And so he's been real, you know, and he puts those, all that extra information, you know, the Byers and the Brisses and the Karen speed points and stuff, and he does all those little explanatory notes at the bottom. And but what you do is you look at the last eighth mile and the last 3/8 miles of horse's last race at a mile and an eighth. It's sort of the template. Ron extrapolates on a mile and 16th races, and then the Louisiana Derby now is a mile and 3/16. So it's not completely uniform, but it does show a pattern going back to 1990, which I think is when they started putting in some of those splits in the chart. So you can't necessarily go back a lot farther. That the vast majority of horses, I think it's 27 of the last 30, either came home their last eighth mile, and this is adjusted to how far back they were behind the leader at the time, in their last prep in 13.0 seconds or faster, and or they came home the last 3/8 in 38.0 or faster. And what it shows is horses that maybe want to go that extra eighth mile, that I call the longest eighth mile in horse racing, from a mile and an eighth to the mile and a quarter the first Saturday in May. And also, if they're in good form or if they've tailed off, they're over the top. A big part of the value is it eliminates some horses. 23, I want to say, qualify on both parameters. And then there's another four that on one or the other. And if you have to have one or the other, I prefer the last 3/8 being the one they qualify as opposed to the last eight. Just because if it's a romp to the wire, the jockey might let up.
Yeah.
And it could easily be, you know, over 13 seconds. But this year, I'm looking at this chart. The Arkansas Derby, I mean, that's what, it's 13-2, 39-3. You know, that's super stock. That's one thing. And you know, the Wood Memorial. Now, Bourbonic is split. He's got the, as you can see there, up there, 12.9 for the final eighth, and then 38.5 is a little bit over. And actually, you know, the 38.5, that's not just a little, it's, you know, it's not 39, but it's not 38-1.
Yeah.
So my tendency is probably to throw out the Wood horses. Then you've also got a split, you know, with Rock Your World. I'm thinking, you know, he's real close to the 13, just because I think there's nine horses that qualify on both, and Rock Your World's one that qualifies on the 1/8, but not the last 3/8. So I'm even though I do think turf horses, the late great John Asher and Mark Cassie also has always said, a little turf in your pedigree doesn't hurt you Derby time. Look at Animal Kingdom, look at Barbaro. It doesn't help you when it comes to Preakness, but there's something about the way the track they're able to grip it. But it also probably has to speak to the stamina of the Kentucky Derby. But also, Hot Rod Charlie is a horse that we really, really need to take a very strong look at.
Who seems to almost be getting ignored. He's sitting number two on the points list, and you hear very little conversation about Hot Rod Charlie.
Yeah, I agree with you. He was a huge price when he was second, and a good second, a really good second in the to the champion in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And this horse, let's see when they added the, you know, since they added the blinkers on him, he's. And look at that. He's by a Preakness winner. I'm with you. You know, that pace was a little bit, of course, it was a mile 3/16. It was, you know, not a wicked pace in the Louisiana Derby, but I think he's another one who probably going to benefit if somebody else wants to be out in front. And I tell you, there's some people, Chad Brown being one of them, with Highly Motivated, that were very happy to see Chad Caddo River.
Yeah.
Commit in. They think that's really going to help with the pace scenario. And so, you know, that's one thing with the point system. It hasn't really, you know, it's gotten rid of like that crazy speed, with the exception of it. Who was it? Palace Malice with the blinkers. You know, was that, I think that was the first year of the point system. And he just, you know, and then who would have thought, 5 weeks later, he wins the Belmont Stakes, a horse that was running off in the Kentucky Derby, basically.
Jenny, we appreciate the Derby conversation. And again, I will actually link to that chart on Equidaily if people want to pull that up and look at that, peruse that a little more, the final fractions theory. I will also, and we've been using audio clips on the podcast, as I say, to the interviews. We'll continue to use those over the next week. Great job there.
Good.
But before I let you go, I want to get to another area of your expertise.
Let's
you
see.
Do work with Kentucky Downs. And
yeah,
I guess
I'm
it's never
to
too early.
Point to see right behind
it's,
me.
Exactly. You've got the background, and it's never too early to talk some Kentucky Downs. The condition book came out, set us up for the 2021 meet.
That's right. The condition book just came out a couple of days ago, and the stakes schedule has been out since early April. And we're really excited because for the first time, we picked up a second win in your in race, our mile and a half, our $1 million, our first $1 million race. We got $3 million races this year. But the Calumet Turf Cup is a win in your in for the Longines Breeders' Cup turf for the first time. So very excited about that. And they're also going to be televised on NBC Sports Network, which we're really excited about getting that, you know, and we'll be the only track running that day because, as you know, after Saratoga, there's a little delay until Belmont reopens, and we're running right during that delay. And you know, we overlap Saratoga for 2 days, same with Del Mar, but then we're like the main show. So that's going to be real exciting. And then after, you know, everybody's purses took a hit last year with COVID. Ours still were like, you know, I'm not bragging, but among the top in the world still. But you know, but we're back having, you know, the $125,000 maiden races, $135,000 allowance races. If you are Kentucky bred, which is the vast majority of the horses that race at Kentucky Downs. But the purses, you know, even with our stakes, like the $1 million races, the base purse is $550,000, and so it's an extra $450,000 if you're Kentucky bred. But what's wrong with $550,000? It only sounds like, you know, wow, I'm not running for that much money when you think about what you left on the table by not being a Kentucky bred. But it's a program that, you know, the Kentucky bred races are all open races. We don't have restricted races. But it's a good way that it certainly rewards the horses, and I think it makes the Kentucky bred very valuable. Now, I also do really appreciate the value of these, you know, the New York bred program, and I know there's a lot of people that take a lot of sort of Kentucky pedigree, and they take, but they are New York breds, and they, you know, your program up there, I'm segueing, but you know, your New York breds are not like what they used to be, I would say. They've really, and we like to think a lot of that's because a lot of them are Kentucky breds that maybe were born in New York. Anyways, I went way off the rails there. But, you know, just, it seems like it's a long time away, early September. It's 6 days of racing and spread over 8 days, all turf, 10 or 11 races a day. I just think it's going to be a really fabulous meet if we can get lucky with the weather. You know, we had some of the highest field sizes, average fields in the country. It's amazing what you can do when you have turf racing and a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's great that, you know, that's a historical horse racing. It's what makes it all possible. And unlike some states, we don't have the competition. We do from out-of-state casinos, but not within Kentucky, because it is a horse product and it can only be at horse tracks. And the way it has helped, you know, I also work at Ellis Park, and that's how they've really gotten those purses up, by transferring some money that was generated at Kentucky Downs, this agreement they have with the, you know, the Kentucky HBPA, because, you know, it is the horseman's money. But yeah, Ellis Park's gonna, their purses are gonna probably be a record again this year after, again, everybody, you know, was down last year. So. All good things going on, and I know you've got a lot of great things that are going on in New York too, and I'm just really happy to see it, because we need racing to be strong in all these regions. You know, I just say that, you know, we need tracks, we need people becoming fans. I mean, racing's not a sport that you're just gonna pick up an app and start, you know, like an ADW and start betting. You know, the best way is probably having some exposure to a racetrack in person.
Totally agree. And I think I've been saying it, well, for the past year. I think racing's done a great job during the pandemic to keep the product going. I think a lot of new people have been exposed during this past year.
That is true.
A little silver lining in a very dark cloud of the last year. But things, as we're kind of moving into sunlight, and we were talking before we went on, we're double vaxxed, and hopefully more people get to that point as the summer moves along, and things get back to normal by the time of Saratoga and Kentucky Downs and whatnot. A little bit of normalcy, though, coming up in about a week at Churchill Downs, as we are back the first Saturday in May, and some fans on track as well. Jenny, we appreciate the Derby conversation. We'll check in certainly before Kentucky Downs goes, but again, appreciate the conversation. Have fun, you and everybody down at Churchill next week.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Seth.
Jenny Reese talking a little Kentucky Derby live from Louisville.
Want to take advantage of everything Capital OTB has to offer? Become a Capital Bets account holder today. It's quick and easy. And now for the month of April, it's our new member sign-up bonus. Simply make a minimum deposit of $200, bet $400, and receive a $200 cash bonus deposited directly into your new account. That's $200 free money from Capital OTB, so sign up today and win more with Capital OTB.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Stone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont
Welcome back to Racing Across America. I will wrap things up. Want to thank certainly a little bit earlier Mark Cassie. Again, not a busy time for him. He was at the OBS sale, but he's had a bunch of workers on Friday morning when we caught up with him, but he carved out a little time for us, and we appreciate that. And thanks also to Jenny Reese for joining us, doing some great work for the Kentucky HBPA. We've been pulling up some of her interviews and dropping them into the Daily Report and beyond. And we will wrap up Racing Across America with a couple of those interviews as well, because she mentioned it when we talked to her on Friday morning. She was on the backstretch, talked to both Irod Ortiz and Todd Pletcher. So as we wrap up Racing Across America for the Saturday morning, we will play those two interviews on the way out. But I'm going to wrap things up for Racing Across America for this week. Be back in a couple hours. Well, yeah, a couple hours, maybe a little bit longer than that, because we're going a little bit later today. Don't forget, there is the bankroll here at the Clubhouse Racebook today. You can potentially get on the team between 11 and 3, put your name in the hat. I'll play the bankroll from about 3 to 7. We'll go a little bit later today with the late post time at Churchill. We'll overlap a little of that racing. So again, the bankroll today here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 7-11. Central Avenue in Albany. But as I say, be back with OTB Live and the bankroll plays / the bankroll plays a little bit later on here on the network. But we will wrap things up for this Saturday morning edition of Racing Across America. And we'll do it by leaving you with, again, the HBPA, Kentucky HBPA interviews Friday morning on the Churchill backstretch. Irod Ortiz and Todd Pletcher. We'll see you in a couple hours.
Talk about his work.
He worked great. He worked inside today. We let him go nice and relaxed. He was traveling perfect. We asked him a little bit on the end of the work. He responded really well, galloped out nice. He went like minute and a four, probably one-on-one, close. And that was what we was looking for. So thank God, everything came out great. Hopefully we have a good race from him next Saturday.
He looked like he settled back a little bit behind Sainthood at the end of the work. Like maybe he's kind of smart and knows when to turn it on and when to turn it off.
Oh yeah, after he passed the wire, he just wanna, you know, I'm done. Let me just pull up. I say no, let's work. I tap a couple times on the shoulder to let him know that we keep working. You know, get out something of him that he don't wanna give me. So we wanna be ready, no excuses, and be 100% for the race.
Does he do the same thing in his races when he hits the lead? Does he play around a little bit?
Last time when he made the lead, he kind of like look around a little bit, but as soon as I hit it, he just go forward. Every time you can be a little aggressive with him. He like that, you know. You gotta check him up. Let's go, and then he go.
How much of a step forward do you feel like he took in the Florida Derby?
Sorry.
How much of a step forward do you feel like he took in the Florida Derby?
Oh,
what did you see from him that day?
He improved a lot that day. He went inside of horses. He was close to the packet. He wasn't too far. He gets some dirt. He's growing. He's growing. He's learning by every race he's won. He get better and better. And hopefully he improved a little more for this one. We need it.
Did the blinkers make a difference with him?
Probably. I think. I never rode him without blinkers, but I think the blinkers helped him a lot. That was a good call from Todd and his whole team, whoever told him to try the blinkers on.
Irod, talk to us about the Derby, your experiences riding it. I think your best finish was a fourth, I think, on Improbable, I believe?
Yes.
Talk to us about your prior experiences and what it would mean if you were fortunate enough to win.
It's a hard race to win. It's 20 horses out there. Everybody won the same thing, win. Every horse come ready to do it. And just the hardest race in the world, I think. And 3 years old, going mile and a quarter, but it's nothing impossible. And we're ready. We're ready for it.
Well, I think your brother really likes your mountain here.
Oh, yeah. That horse is he turns, I think. The horse is doing so good in the Wood Memorial, and probably he wake up. They expect a lot from the horse. He's got a good pedigree to go the distance. I think he got a good shot, too. I think he got a good shot. Hopefully one of those win. Hopefully me, but if not, I wish all the best to him and to everyone else. You know, it's a dream race.
Country House sounded like a muffler.
Favorite part of the day?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Go get them.
How'd it go today?
I thought it went great. Yeah, we had a good morning. Everyone executed the breezes the way we were hoping to, so I was very, very happy.
Heavy lifting out of the way?
Yeah, I mean, that was a final piece of major work, and, you know, we'll just kind of have routine gallops and some gate schooling, paddock schooling, that sort of stuff leading up to the race. Races.
Anybody get a gold star this morning of your five?
I mean, just knowing all their personalities and, you know, what type of workhorses they are. You know, Nona Jinda's not the most aggressive workhorse. I know some people have been picking on him a little bit, but, you know, it's just, I said before we came here, he's not an always dreaming that's going to come in here and go in 59 by himself. That's not his personality. I thought he had a good, productive work today and last week, and I really liked the way Sainthood worked with him. You know, they were good mates, and both put in good quality works. I thought Dynamic One was particularly impressive this morning. I liked the way he finished and loved the way he galloped out, and it seemed like he was full of energy and kind of did it with his ears pricked. So I thought his work was excellent. Bourbonic, he's been pretty aggressive the last few days galloping, so I decided to work him by himself, and thought it was a good steady breeze with a particularly strong gallop out, and seems like he the further he goes the better he gets. So happy with
Philly?
Philly's, yeah, I mean she's just a star. She does everything right, and effortless 48 and good gallop out, and John Velasquez on board. He said she handled the track well, and it's what we've always expected from her. Accustomed to seeing, you know, just a good quality breeze.
The one race, is it, you know, I know it wasn't by design like you mentioned yesterday, but now that you've only had the one, he feels that it's enough to have her?
Well, yeah, I think so, because I think naturally she's designed to go a mile and an eighth, and you know, the further she goes, the better she'll get. And you know, we had a good foundation, the two-year-old races into her after a 7-furlong maiden race and attempted then the Demoiselle at a mile and an eighth in the beginning of December. So perfect world, maybe we'd had two preps, but I feel like we've arrived here in as good a shape as we could be, so maybe it was a blessing.
And also, it wasn't necessarily an easy race. You just didn't kind of, I mean, she had to work.
No, she had to work. I mean, she came home the last quarter, I think, in 23-2, you know, and ran down a nice filly, and, you know, like I said, I think added distance is going to be to her liking.
Todd, you mentioned Dynamic One again. I don't know anything, but I was very smooth down the backside after the work, and just like it was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, he really picked it up on the gallop out past the wire, and I had Jose Ortiz on the radio and kind of reeled him in after the 113 and change. Sure, I was a little worried he was going to keep going and overdo it a little bit. So, but, you know, while he was doing that, he threw his ears up, and so it seemed like he was doing it well within himself.
You know, the very first race that he ran, I'm sure, was one that still.
Yeah, I mean, he's a horse that we really, really liked before his debut, and we expected big things from him. And his first start, going 7/8, he drew the one hole, and he hopped at the start and hit the side of the gate and didn't run his race. And then, you know, come back in a maiden race next time from a difficult post position at Gulfstream and be second to greatest honor, which, you know, we were disappointed he didn't win, but we felt like we were on course. And the race that kind of threw us off was when he finished fourth in his next start at Gulfstream. But again, he had a difficult post position going a mile on the 16th there. And that's when we decided, let's get away from Gulfstream, go back to Aqueduct and get a mile and an eighth race into him. And fortunately, that worked out well. And I think in the wood, that was what we were hoping for in terms of him showing us that he belongs with this group. But he kind of got there and then he didn't know what to do with it once he made the lead. So I think he's still a work in progress and putting it all together, and seems to be improving at the right time.
You're watching Capital OTB TV. Wager at CapitalOTBBet.com for the most comprehensive wagering site and the best player rewards in New York State.